We asked our listeners, that would be you, to send in questions you most needed answers to. We got an overwhelming response. So in today's podcast, Richard and I go back and forth in a lively discussion, responding to some of your toughest questions. Hopefully, we give you helpful answers so that you can go do more of your work more effectively.
Welcome to the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group, featuring Richard Perry and Jeff Schreifels. Twice a month, we bring you the latest and best thinking about major gift fundraising, so you can develop authentic relationships with your major donors. Here are your hosts, Richard and Jeff.
Welcome to the podcast today. Richard Perry is with me. And Richard, I think we're going to have fun today because today's podcast is us getting to answer listeners' questions.
Oh, I know. I just love when we get to do this, whether it's, you know, on our blog or in our quarterly question and answer webinars that we do, or answering questions from folks on the front lines of this work. I mean, it's not only fun for us, but it allows us to feel connected to the people that are out there on the front lines who are seeking guidance, you know, in their everyday work. I mean, it's just a satisfying way to help in this way. I mean, it really is.
It sure is. I mean, we do this podcast so we can provide some kind of advice and strategy and help in your work as a frontline fundraiser, manager, or leader. But when we can hear directly from you what you're dealing with today, it does help us make it. It really does help us feel more connected to you.
Yeah, it really does.
So with that, let's start some of the questions. So I have a question for you. So let's start with Kate's question. She says, I'm a chief development officer of a small state-based nonprofit, small as in our budget is $8 million, of which about $3 million comes from major donors.
Mm-hmm.
And our major donor team consists of me and one gift officer. So her question is, what criteria should I use to determine when to hire another MGO and where do you think that person should be located? So Richard, what do you have to say to Kate?
Yeah, well, this is not as easy as it sounds, but I'm going to try to take a whack at it. But basically, what I would do, Kate, is do some analysis and find the number of donors who have given 1,000 plus cum in any one of the last full calendar years.
Yeah,
and year to date this year. So find the number of how many of those donors are there in your file?
Yeah.
Like we've given in the last two full calendar years plus year to date this year. Then divide that number by 450. So why 450? Because we're basically saying it takes 150 qualified donors.
Yeah.
To make a caseload or to be the equivalent of one full-time major gift officer. And so since the ratio of people, donors that meet the metric to those that actually want to relate to you is 3 to 1. So you multiply 150 times 3, that's 450. So that's why we've got that 450 number. So you find how many donors you have, 1,000 cum, divide by 450, and the result is the number of major gift officers you could hire.
Yeah.
Now, usually that number's higher than you want to actually hire. So, but it'll be instructive in terms of like how many you could hire. Now, we tend to, Jeff, basically say hire more than less, and most nonprofits don't do that. But anyway, that's how I would get to it. Now, in terms of where to put them,
yeah.
Once you've figured out those 450. Donors that cluster, you know, then you look at where the clusters are geographically, and that's where you would create the service areas. That's how I would go about it. I don't know if that's all clear, but
yeah, no, that makes sense. So let's just say, for example, you've got 900 donors that meet your 1,000 plus criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You essentially have enough for two major gift officers in that case,
right? Right,
50 each. Who then would qualify to get 150.
Right.
Yeah.
In fact, we always do this analysis this way with clients.
Yeah.
And I remember one client earlier, like last month, where it came up that Well, good night. They had enough room for 10 major gift officers, which just shocked them. Like, yeah. Well, we're not going to hire 10. Well, you actually should hire 10 because the money you're losing in value attrition from those donors is greater than the cost of actually hiring 10 major gift officers. I mean, it's counterintuitive, I know, but that's kind of how it works.
Yep. Okay. I love that. So here's another one. And this one is from Cindy. And she asks, what percentage of healthy nonprofits donors should be major donors? However, that nonprofit defines major. So is there some sort of metric on the percentage of major donors versus the rest of the file?
Yeah, I was thinking about this when I saw the question, and there really isn't a metric. I mean, people put out things now, although I'm going to put out something in just a second, but it's like there really isn't a metric. But here's the thing. The first thing you should do is do the pipeline analysis to see how many donors fit into the various giving ranges. So you can see, well, there's this many donors in $0 to $25 annually, this many donors from, you know, 25 to 50 and so on.
Yeah.
And take a look at how much revenue is coming from the 1,000 CUME plus donors and up.
Mm-hmm.
And the kind of quick and dirty look at, I had at various pipeline analysis, I basically came to the conclusion that 30 to 50% of the revenue should come from that group of donors.
Yeah.
1,000 CUME and up.
Yeah.
And when you do the donor count, you know, at least 10% of active donors must be 1,000 CUME or up.
Yeah.
And if you, I mean, this is a variable. It could be plus or minus 5-10% on either of those things in terms of revenue and active donors. But the point is, if you do the pipeline analysis, you can actually see, oh my goodness, I have so many donors 1,000 CUME and down or lower than that.
Mm-hmm.
And hardly any on, I mean, like this other file that we were analyzing in the last few weeks, they had 167,000 donors.
Wow.
Of which only 21 donors were above the higher range of like 5,000 CUME. Well, you can just look at that and say to yourself, that's off balance.
Yeah.
So I would use something along the lines of those metrics. 30 to 50% of the revenue should come from 1,000 CUME plus CUME donors. 10% of the active donors must be 1,000 CUME plus donors as well.
Yeah.
Now, that's for a smaller kind of file.
Right.
If you get into a file that's like 750 million, a large, large, large file, you might bump up that 1,000 plus CUME number to 5,000 or 10,000.
Right.
And then use the same numbers. Okay. So Jeff, I have one for you from Julie.
Okay.
So she wrote, sometimes nonprofits have excellent development directors who rise to the top because they're great major gift officers, but they're not great with strategic thinking, long-range planning, staying up to date with fundraising methods and technologies, strategically implementing large campaigns, setting big picture marketing goals, setting goals and benchmarks for the board to measure impacts as well as the internal staff, et cetera. She says, I see development directors who are assumed to have the skills of a VP of philanthropy, but just because the money grows, you know, sometimes because of one or two large, you know, annual donors, it becomes clear that the bigger picture leadership is needed. So when it's time to find a VP of philanthropy and let that development director excel as the MGO, they've always been. So like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah. Gosh, we run into this one a lot, don't we? Because there are many development teams where the development director, or if they're larger, they have a director of major gifts. And the person in that position was brought in because they were one of the best, they were the best major gift officer. And so they're like, oh, we're going to take our best major gift officer and put them in a role of managing.
Yeah, and it's done in commercial field as well. You take the best salesperson and make them the manager.
And it almost every time we've seen this, Richard, it's a failure because of the motivation of the person who is the great major gift officer.
Mm-hmm.
They're focused. I mean, they get their joy from getting results from their own efforts, right? So they're out there, they're talking to donors. The donor responds. That's how they get fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
The manager, however, gets fulfillment in the development and the work of others.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put a major gift officer, a really good one, who's getting results through their own efforts, and then make them a manager, they lose who they are. And they are not good managers because they're always going to be wired to get in and do it themselves and not really worry about other people and managing them and make sure that they're developed and fulfilled.
Well, they'll be messing around with the content of the people they're managing instead of letting them get results.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's.
You know, the best, I feel like the best people that are managers who come from the major gift side are those people who are in major gifts and they're good, but you know, it's not their top thing that they like, but they know the work. And so they know what it takes. They themselves may not be great at it, but they know what it takes and they know how they rather develop people. It's almost like I've written about this before, and it's kind of like in the sports world, the best managers, like in baseball, none of them were great players. None of the great managers were great players. They were okay, but they're not in the Hall of Fame type of thing, but they know the game and they'd rather develop other people.
Yeah, so it boils down to, do you want to get results through your own efforts or do you want to get results through the efforts of others, which is the definition of a manager.
Exactly.
And so I think your answer is basically, just because someone's a great major gift officer doesn't make them a great leader and manager.
Exactly. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. I have a question for you, Richard, from Tracy. And she asks this. How do you move out of the stewardship phase and start in on the solicitation process?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting that first of all, it's interesting that Tracy divides those two into these two different distinct categories, because in our philosophy, we're basically saying you create this 12-month communication plan. But now, what is the communication plan? It's basically identifying the interests and passions of the donor, right?
Right.
And then servicing that from two points of view. One messaging objective is basically, okay, let's tell the donor how their giving is making a difference. That's the stewardship side.
Yeah.
And then the second part is, let's tell the donor what else needs to be done in the area of their passions and interests. So creating touch points that lead up to that kind of ask.
Yeah.
And creating offers. And depending on the offer, you may want to add a few touch points that are communicating more about the specific thing the donor's interested in. But it's basically managing those two strategic messaging points.
Yes.
How's your gift made a difference? What else needs to be done? And mixing them in together in a 12-month communication plan. I mean, that's...
Yeah. I think it feels like, well, her question is that whole moves management thing, right?
Mm-hmm. It's,
you know, they have that 7-step moves management. And I think traditional major gift work is built around that. And even software is built around this.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is where I think our Veritas way differs. Just what you said is like, no, it's not about this step and that step and this and the next step. It's about finding out the donor's passion and interests and creating a plan around that. And the donor as cadence and interest and all of those things, because it's around the donor, not about your set 7-step process necessarily.
Exactly. And it has two communication objectives. How did your gift, answering the question, here's how your giving made a difference, or the statement, and here's what else needs to be done in the area of your interest. Those are the two things, and they mix differently for different donors.
Yeah.
So that's why I wouldn't say you move out of stewardship. You never move out of stewardship.
Never. And you never
start in on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you start in on solicitation. Well, no, you're always talking about what else
exactly.
needs to be done.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. So, that's how that I would do that. Okay. So here's a question from Mary Pat for you, Jeff.
Okay.
How do you best use the Veritas principles and tools in a small department?
Yeah. Okay. So this is a question we often get, because I think people have a lot of fundraisers think, oh, well, this whole system that you have, this Veritas way with the structure and everything else, the 150 per caseload, is just for large organizations. And it's not. It can be used for any size organization. Even if you have one donor, you can use the Veritas way to do major gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, for example, okay. So we often say, okay, you need 150 donors for one portfolio that are qualified. And to get the 150, you need 450, as you were just talking about before, 450 donors to get to that 150. Well, you might only have 100 donors total.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay. That fit your criteria of what is a major gift, but that's okay. You know that of 100 donors, you'll have a third of them. So let's say 33 of them will become donors that would be part of a portfolio that you could manage.
Mm-hmm,
so all of the principles of, and then tiering those donors and creating a plan, a goal for all those donors can be done for any size portfolio.
I know, it could be like half of a portfolio or a fourth of a portfolio. They still all apply all those principles.
It all applies. And then, you know, sometimes people are like, well, you know, we can't afford a full-time person or a half-time person. Hey, even if you can only devote, let's say 10% of your time, that's another way to look at this. All right. So I can devote 10% of my time to major gifts. And if a full-time portfolio is 150, then I can reasonably manage 15 people. That's how another way to look at it. Okay.
Yep.
At least you're doing those 15 people.
Right.
Again, you're doing all the same principles of putting goals, you're tiering those donors, you're putting a communication plan into place. And as well as you're doing all the other things that Richard was talking about, you're reporting back the impact of those gifts, you're thanking the donors, you're pursuing those donors' passion and interests. All those same things apply, whether you have 15 donors or 150 donors in your portfolio.
Or two.
Yeah, or two people. Exactly. Yeah, that's
same
the
thing.
That's the thing. And so it's regardless of size. It doesn't matter how big or how small you are. Okay. So this is going to be our last question. And I'd love for you to answer this one, Richard. Here's the question. I'm struggling to make the case to hire administrative support for our MGOs. What are some things I can share with leadership to convince them of this investment?
Yeah, this is, we go round and round with leaders and managers on this point because they can't seem to see the benefit of, and so the basic principle that we're always arguing is this: if you have a major gift officer or a plan giving officer, what's the greatest value that those people can actually deliver to the organization? The greatest value they can deliver is spending as much of their personal time talking to donors.
Yeah.
Versus doing reports, doing analysis, doing all the administrative stuff. you know, mailings. I mean, how many times have we seen a very highly paid major gift officer, planned giving officer, you know, stuffing envelopes?
Oh, yeah.
And not talking to donors.
Right.
So when you actually look at the cost of an administrative person, so depending on where you are in the country and the size of your organization, it could be annual cost all in of $30,000 to $50,000, let's say.
Yeah.
Might be more than that. Could be 50, 60, or 70, but whatever that number is.
Yeah.
The analysis that we've done shows that if you take all of that work and have the major gift officer do it, it actually reduces the amount of time that person is with the donors, which then reduces the amount of asks and the amount of interaction with donors, which then reduces the revenue at a rate greater than the actual cost to hire the administrative person.
Yeah.
And so you're actually working against yourself economically if you don't support the person properly. Now, some people say, well, do I have to do a full-time administrative person, you know, a one-to-one ratio, one full-time admin person to one full-time major gift person? Well, no, you could do one full-time admin person for two major gift officers.
Yeah.
And thereby, the cost is minimal. And the upside is that the major gift officer properly managed is going to be actually talking to and relating to more donors,
yeah,
which then results in more revenue. And you could just do your own analysis of that in a year and see how that actually happens. But the concept and the principle is really true. You are losing money by not supporting your major gift officer and your plan giving officer, not providing administrative support. You're losing money.
Yeah. I think that's the key to get leadership to say yes, is because they just look at it as overhead, right?
Yep.
No direct correlation to any revenue at all. So they're like,
exactly,
we're not going to do this. I know you have a blog post on this that actually has a formula that you wrote up. So if for this person who wanted the help, I would go to our blog and search for administrative support, and all the blogs that deal with that will come up. And Richard's blog has an actual formula you can use that will show how much revenue you will lose if you don't have administrative support. And then you can show the revenue loss, which will then help them decide, oh gosh, this does make sense.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you can just talk to a leader and say, do you want the person out there talking to donors, or do you want them to do all this administrative? And it dawns on the leader or manager, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And others, you got to show them more hard data in terms of like, well, look, this is the actual cost.
Right.
And you're going to actually lose more revenue than the cost. So why are you doing that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's awesome, Richard. So we could probably spend another 10 hours here if we wanted to answer questions.
Be fun.
It would be fun. So before you go, one way to get more of your questions answered is to go to our resource library at Veritas Group. Our website, veritasgroup.com, has free resources for you, like blogs that we just mentioned, white papers, more podcasts, free webinars, a donor engagement plan, just a ton of stuff in there, all free for you to use to help you make your work easier. Again, just go to veritasgroup.com/resources, and it's all right there for you.
It's all there.
And thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
See you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the Nothing But Major Gifts podcast from Veritas Group. Richard and Jeff also write an ongoing blog that you can subscribe to for free at veritasgroup.com. Please join us again next time.